And welcome to another episode of the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester, and it's damned cold today.
Ugh, you said it. It's in New Jersey here. It's we get snow every other day now, and school gets canceled or delayed opening every day here. So it's really kind of a pain.
My car would not start today.
Yeah,
negative. It was negative 13 when I woke up, and they said with the wind chill factor, it was actually like negative 25 or 30 or something like that. It's insanely cold.
Crazy. Well, Patrick, who are you and what do you do?
I'm Patrick. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. I hang out at All Things for My Brain, atfmb.com, and post silly things and interesting things, and I write things for SF Signal, and I like to make John and Elio laugh.
You do. You don't always, but you do. You do like to.
Well, I like to try.
Yeah, I am John, and I'm a singer-songwriter, and I write stuff about science fiction and fantasy and other nerdy things. You can get my music for as little as free over at johnanilio.bandcamp.com.
But that pisses me off. So you got to pay at least 99 cents.
Well,
I don't want anybody going to johnanilio.bandcamp.com and not paying 99 cents.
Yeah. Well, either way. So
you're too nice. I'm more hard ass about that.
Yes, I see. I understand how that works. Well, anyway, this week we had the opportunity to interview Sherry Priest, who has a new book out called Bloodshot. And Sherry was an absolute delight. Really, just a very open and really nice person, and having great success right now. And we were very fortunate to have her on the show. And I think you're really going to enjoy the interview. So,
except for the part about barbecue.
Yes. And on the line, we have a great author who has a new book out called Bloodshot, and she is a critically acclaimed author and an award-nominated and award-winning author as well for Bone Shaker. And on the line, we have Sherry Priest. Say hello, Sherry.
Hi.
Oh, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Really happy to have you on. Just to let folks know, we had a good 10-minute chat about the South and barbecue before we got on. So if you want to join us for Patrick and I's other podcast, which is Southern Barbecue, Sherry did a good 10 minutes on on that. So
don't even tease that. I know.
I know. Well, anyway.
But now we're all warmed up.
I know. We're totally warmed up.
We can do 2 hours on the differences between hickory smoked and applewood smoked.
Right.
Oh, I could do at least 2 hours on the difference between Texas barbecue and Southern barbecue. I was told that we couldn't talk about barbecue.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you put sauce on it, it's not barbecue.
Yeah. Well, before we actually devolve into that.
You started it. You opened it up.
I totally did. Well, Sherry has a new book out, which I'm not sure if it's on the shelves yet. I got a copy from
it's last week.
Came out last week, and it is called Bloodshot. Mm-hmm. The good folks of Delray Spectra sent it to me, and I read it and loved it. And I want to talk a little bit about it. But really what I want to ask is that I was kind of surprised when the book was sent to me, because I did not – this is the first book of yours that I read, and you are well known for Bone Shaker, which was an award-nominated and award-winning steampunk novel. I guess that's usually what it was billed as and marketed as. And when I saw the cover, it's a very urban fantasy kind of cover, and I guess it could sort of be.
No. I don't see a tattoo.
There's no tattoo and there's no bag. But
no, I yeah, I've requested that, because they will often send you like little things to the effect of, hey, you know, do you have any thoughts as to what you'd like the cover to be? And I often joke that authors are kind of treated like royalty, and that we enjoy the right to be consulted and then ignored. I'm very, very rarely listened to, but I thought, okay, what the hell? Because I'd never done any books with them before. And I said, I would really love to see no tattoos, no leather pants, and no headless models. And I think the record will reflect they obeyed the letter of the law, if not the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's a pretty catchy cover, though.
It is.
I certainly can't complain. They did a great job with it. But yeah, it's really, really different from the stuff that I am better known for.
I like the eyes.
There has been some confusion.
I like the eyes.
Yes, well, because I was a little confused too, and I'm like, oh, I didn't realize she wrote, you know, books like this too, you know, because I was more familiar with Bone Shaker, you know, because that actually got a lot of press last year or the previous couple years. But so the big question is, what made you decide to write a book like this, which can sort of be considered a urban fantasy with vampires? What, you know, what made you sort of shift gears to want to write a book like this?
The answer is both really complicated and really simple. I guess to come at it from one angle, I do a lot of horror. Bloodshot's actually my 10th novel, and I did the steampunk stuff is fairly dark. And before that, I did some Southern Gothic stuff, and it was all, you know, pretty intense, pretty dark. And I wanted a chance to do something a little lighter, kind of just have some fun with something, which is not to say that the steampunk stuff isn't fun, because it absolutely is. But I do humor a lot on my blog, or at least I used to. These days I'm a little more boring. I've been working so much. But I wanted a chance to do something funny, and this seemed like kind of the venue through which to do it. And also at the time that we sold Bloodshot, my agent, who's fantastic, at the time that she sold that, when we first started talking about doing it, I was coming to the end of my contract with a tour. And this was before Bone Shaker, and honestly, I didn't think they were ever going to do another book with me. I was a terrible seller. I was like, oh, you know, I should start trying something different. I should start, you know, looking into other stuff. And I have a lot of friends who do urban fantasy, and they said, look, this is fun. You kind of get to do whatever you want, and then there's a lot of money in it, and you should totally take a stab at this. Come on. So I pulled together a proposal on it, just playing around, because I thought, well, you know, if I'm not having fun, I'm doing it wrong, and may as well go get a day job. Well, I have a part-time day job, but you know what I mean. So, yeah, you know, it was just kind of this amalgam, this the timing was right, and everything. I was like, okay, it's time to do something different. But then, of course, Bone Shaker took off, which stunned no one more than me. I could not believe that happened. But then all of a sudden, I'm very known for doing this one thing, and I'm like, oh dear, well, now I have this urban fantasy coming out, and it's really, really, really different. I hope that people will take a chance on it regardless. And I am still doing the steampunk stuff. I have two more books in the same universe coming out in the next couple of years. So it's not like I've quit doing the one thing and moved on to this other thing. I write pretty fast. I think I did three books last year.
Wow.
I have four coming out this year. Three different genres. I have enough attention span to do a lot of different things, and this seemed like one more fun thing I could kind of throw into the mix.
What's your daily word count? Do you keep track of that?
Oh, yeah, I often do. Actually, January has not been much of a word count month. I've been doing editorial and cleanup and the like on some of the things that are coming later on this year. When I am at full swing in a project, I hesitate to say easily, I can consistently do between 3,000 and 5,000 words a day.
Wow, that's awesome. Good for you.
well, thank you. I generally consider like 2,000 words a day to be a good work day, a solid work day. You know, because like I said, I do have a day job. I'm an associate editor with Subterranean Press.
Never heard of them.
Which is a great gig.
Never heard of them.
Never? Really?
No.
Oh, well, they're this wonderful independent company based out of Michigan that they do a lot of
I'm teasing you, Sherry. I'm teasing you.
Okay, fine. I don't know. I'm on the phone. I can't see your faces.
Well, we know Subterranean.
Yeah, so I work for them, and he gets my mornings, and then in the afternoon I do writer business and writer work. And so it really depends on how much business work there is on top of the writing work that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the record,
I'm not working on anything.
Just for the record, Subterranean's awesome.
Yeah.
They send us
super
stuff.
Awesome.
They send us stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm glad Bill does.
I thought it was interesting. Mike Resnick just said over on SF Signal on that pod, he said, you know, with all the changes coming in the publishing industry, you're going to have a lot of changes, and Subterranean is still going to be around because, you know, they do great things. Yeah. That's kind of paraphrasing but that's what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now he's got a hell of a business model, and the people who work for him are very, very loyal to him. I count myself in that batch.
So,
it's great company, good stuff, but it eats my mornings. So.
Yeah, we're pretty familiar. I actually, if you were familiar with the Clash of the Geeks book that came out with Will Wheaton and John Scalzi, I have a song. I'm a musician and a songwriter, and I have the Unicorn Pegasus Kitten song that was included in that. So the sheet music.
Unicorn.
Yeah. So we're familiar with Subterranean because they published one of my that song that I put in there. So we're quite familiar with the package.
Nice.
I swear Subterranean sent me something by Sherry, but I cannot find it.
Mm.
I thought they sent me something that was written by you, like a novella or something. But I'll be damned if I can find it.
I have done some shorter projects for them.
Yeah, I'll be damned if I can find it.
I have a first refusal clause in most of my contracts, so I can't do full length stuff for other people necessarily. But mm-hmm. I've done some shorter projects for them. I guess three at this point I've done.
Gotcha.
Including one of the steampunk ones last year.
Yeah, well, getting back to Blutch, and then one of the things that you said was that you wanted to do something that was fun, and that's something that I certainly picked up on, was the sense of humor in the book was very, the best way I could describe it was very realistic. You know, it really felt, the characters felt very lived in, and you know, the humor that went into it was, it just seemed like how people actually treat each other and joke around with each other and crack a joke. It's not, I didn't feel like it was some big punchline here and there. It just felt very lived in. And I really grew quite attached to a lot of the characters through reading it because of that interaction and that sense of humor about it. So if you were going for fun, it really came across, and I really enjoyed that aspect of it. But, and I was also, the other thing I was going to say was that it was kind of good timing. You're saying, you know, that Bone Shaker sort of took off and you didn't expect it to take off. And then you had Bloodshot coming out, which is quite different. But it's, I would imagine that's kind of nice because you're probably going to reach a significantly different audience. I'm sure there's people that are fans of Sherry Priest who are going to go buy it because it's Sherry Priest. But I'm sure this is going to appeal to people who did not read Bone Shaker. And then it's kind of nice to be known for two things and not just one thing. So I imagine that could work out pretty well timing-wise for you.
Well, I'm certainly hoping for that, absolutely, because for the first time in my life, actually, this last year, I've made more money writing than I ever earned with a full-time day job. Mm-hmm. That's actually not that huge a steam break, to be perfectly honest. But at the same time, it's like, well, now I'm actually starting to have a career at this. And I'm perfectly happy doing two or three books a year. I get bored and sit around and come up with new projects, you know. So I like having the different styles and different avenues. And like I was working on the sequel to Bloodshot, which is called Hellbent. It'll be out early this fall. At the same time, I was finishing up editorial on the next steampunk book, and the styles were just really, really different. And it was, I don't know, I never thought I was going to be one of those people who could hop back and forth like that, but I found it really refreshing, you know. I would maybe get tired of the one and then work on the other. And the voices for each are both satisfying, but they're also both really, really different.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been an education. I kind of got thrown into the deep end here, so that's
okay.
Yeah.
Now, I had one of the things that I had a question for, because I was, I knew you online through, through various social media, and I followed you on Twitter and, on Facebook. And I one of the things that I wanted to ask you about within this novel is, first of all, I think it's very, it's definitely taking place now, like. And it mm-hmm. felt very, you know, of the time, which I really like that, you know, how they were sort of using technology in the book. And but the question that I wanted to ask is, what is sort of the significance of social media for you? And the reason I ask that is because in reading this book, and I was familiar with the fact that you actually live in Seattle, and this book takes place partially in Seattle. And, you know, a lot of times because nowadays we get books sent to us from the various publishers, and a lot of times what I end up picking to read is not always what the book is about, but what author I'm kind of interested in. It's almost like, you know, as it seems like as an author these days, you know, it's good to sort of be a personality, you know. And I don't know if you view yourself as a personality, but do you think that plays a lot into you know, today's world in terms of, or is it something that you think about when you're writing your book so that people are fans of you? You know, what's your thoughts on all of that?
I'm really not sure. I've been blogging for, 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I got in on LiveJournal many, many, many moons ago. And, I try to kind of participate in a lot of it. Part of it is because, especially in the more recent years, I work from home by myself, you know, and I am not a loner. I'm not shy. I really like people. I'm really interested in people. People are so weird, you know. They give me such great material to write about. And especially, well, for example, when I lived in the South, when I was in Chattanooga all those years, and still had a full-time job and all of that stuff, when I first broke into publishing, I really felt very isolated from, you know, the publishing world, from the publishing community, because I didn't know really anyone in my area who was doing speculative fiction of any kind.
It's all
everybody
spread out.
Everybody seemed to live in New York or on the West Coast or in Colorado. I know you guys have a pretty good scene out there. I love Mario Acevedo and Jeannie Stein. They're great. And they're like fabulous people all around, the pair of them. But I just kind of felt really far removed from everybody, and the internet was kind of a way for me to make friends online that I would later meet and become better friends with in real life, and that's awesome. But now in particular, now that I do everything from home, it's really, really easy to go for days and days without seeing anybody but my husband or the cat, and the internet takes the edge off of it. It gives me somebody to talk to, I guess, is really the shortest way to put it. Because, my God, when my husband gets home from work, I'm usually like a freaking puppy. It's like, oh, my God, here you are. I've been by myself all day. Talk to me. Let's go get some food.
Well, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying about the internet, because really it does kind of shrink the world. Does that make sense? It brings everybody, I have all these friends online that I chat with all the time. You know, my gosh, when I started playing World of Warcraft, I started chatting with people in, you know, Britain and Germany and different countries. Now, thanks to Twitter, you know, every night I'm chatting with, you know, Charles A. Tan in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's all these people.
I just spent about, oh Lord, grand total of an hour arguing with Toby Bacall and John Scalzi over the Underworld movies and Resident Evil movies.
In what way? I mean, what about the Underworld?
Scalzi hates the Resident Evil movies, and I think they're awesome. I recognize they're bad, but I think they're awesome.
Oh, they're popcorn films. They're awesome.
Oh, I love them.
Yeah.
And then we moved on to Underworld and the soundtracks, which I owned the Underworld movies and all of the soundtracks, and I'm weak for these things. And then there were accusations of Twilight, and then it was all from there.
No, there's nothing wrong with Underworld.
Very often.
There's nothing wrong with Underworld.
Not a damn thing, in my opinion. But that's an easy example right there. I mean, Tobias and John live in Ohio, and I only see them in person maybe a couple times a year. But I get to, you know, pick fights with them real time on Twitter, you know.
I'll tell you this about Tobias Bacall. He's a total jerk. I mean, I hate that guy. No, I'm kidding. You know, met him at World Fantasy. Great guy. He is constantly sending emails going, hey dude, how's it going?
Yeah.
Just checking up on me. He's awesome. Yeah, no, he is.
He and John both are actually. Scalzi was one of the first, like, and I'm using title caps, you know, real writer people to be nice to me. So I always, you know, I've always got a soft spot for him. Even if he does hate my favorite movies, it's okay. I love him anyway.
Yeah.
My only connection to Scalzi is when his book appeared on Stargate Universe in a product placement cameo. This guy sitting in the car and he's like, you're going to be here for a couple hours. He says, it's okay. I got something to read. And he holds up Old Man's War. I took a picture with my camera. And I tagged him of the book on the screen, and I tagged him on Twitter and said, look, you know, Scalzi is doing he's a consultant
product
for he's a consultant, and then he does the product placement, and he put that up on his website crediting me, which I thought was kind of awesome.
Oh, that is he's awesome that way.
So John, what's your next
writer
question?
People who I wouldn't have known if I hadn't been on the internet playing with social media. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
To bring it full circle.
Yeah, well, no, because the reason why it's interesting, because I, you know, before I kind of got involved in doing this stuff with the podcast and talking to authors and interviewing them, you know, it always just seemed like whatever was written was, you know, just a pure work of someone's imagination. And now it seems like almost everything that I read is usually for an interview. So I'm going to end up talking to people. And so when I do a little research on them and read about them, as I'm reading their books, it is quite interesting to me that how much of, you know, a person's life or their surroundings work into the book. The example that I usually bring up at this point is Blake Charlton, who I got to know, and his books are about, you know, because Blake, as you may or may not know, is dyslexic. So his books, his main characters are, you know, essentially in that world, what dyslexic is. And obviously that's like a very writing from what you know. So, you know, and I was thinking about that when I was reading Bloodshot, because I'd like, I know that you're in Seattle and, you know, I just
Are you suggesting that she's a vampire thief?
Well, perhaps. But no, but that's the thing is that, like, obviously
it's true.
That's
true. I steal vampires.
Yeah. But it's when you could sort of, you sort of make that connection between the author and their work a little more. And I think it's great. I've enjoyed reading these books. I think it adds another layer of enjoyment. It just adds another level in which to enjoy the literature. Now, not to say that someone who reads these books that has no idea who Sherry Priest is, other than the person that wrote this book, is not going to enjoy this book. They are. But for me, I get an extra, you know, level of enjoyment out of these books, kind of knowing a little bit about the authors. And I think that's something where, you know, I'm not the only one, that I think a lot of people kind of maybe feel that way. So that's kind of what I wanted to bring up, the whole social media angle of it. So
I have a question.
What you were saying about the guy with dyslexia, or Charlton, who I'm not terribly familiar with. But, I absolutely do that myself. When it comes to Raylene, kind of her shtick is that she's severely obsessive compulsive. Mm-hmm. And that actually came from two things. From years ago, when I was kind of a young gosling, reading lots of vampire stories, and many, many traditions with regards to the undead have these tics where the vampires are really OCD. Like, in order to get away from them, you throw a handful of rice or a handful of grain or whatever, and the vampire has to stop and count all the grains before it can come after you. And one day I was sitting around reading something about this, and it's like, yes, and they can't cross, you know, running water in certain lines and certain configurations, and there are all these religious reasons for it. And I was like, well, really? Because I kind of sound like my sister when she's off her meds. Quite literally, you know. I mean, severe obsessive compulsion, it actually runs in my family really strongly. I've watched a number of family members really wrestle with it. And so I actually had quite a lot to draw from when I decided. I'm like, all right, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do this. I'm going to do a vampire and give her modern OCD as we understand it now, rather than in the old-fashioned ritualistic sense. And, I mean, I even talked to my sister about it some, because she's probably the handiest OCD person I know. She's not quite as bad as Raylene, but you can see it from there. And just like little things like, hey, you know, when this sort of thing happens, well, how do you feel about that? How do you react to that? How do you deal with that? And so, I mean, it was kind of interesting all around. And the funny thing was my dad read the book, because he'll read anything I do, bless his heart, even if it's not really his thing.
That's awesome.
I had to point out to him that I was like, yeah, well, I mean, you realize that kind of, I was talking about, the character is not based on my sister, not at all. But she's certainly informed by her and by my aunts and by a handful of other people. So, yeah, I mean, you work your own things into it. You work the people you know into it, even if you're not, you know, doing a caricature of them. They will find their way in. I mean, like, the drag queen who everybody loves. If I had any idea there was such a demand for drag queens in fiction, I would have done this years ago. But the drag queen is loosely based on somebody I was acquainted with in Tennessee. Mm. And is it him? No. But yeah, it certainly, you know, informed the character or gave me the idea for the character. So,
well, I was thinking about that, because that
people are weird.
Yeah, well, because that the drag queen is such a great character in this, and I think one of the reasons why is because, you know, if someone who hasn't read the book, if you think of having a drag queen in a book, it's like, oh, okay, that's a good one note joke that you can play or something. You can paint it very broadly, sure. And this character is not. It's a very, you know, fully developed character, and it's the he, she, depending on, you know, the time in the book.
Have fun with, you know, pronouns in that way.
absolutely, and you know, it's a very real character. It's this is a real person that you could know, and I think that, you know, sort of drawing on people that you know, I think it really adds to the realism of the book and the you know, just the overall enjoyment of it. And, you know, that I had another question now. I totally lost it now because I was going to I forget it. Patrick, you have another question there? Because I totally
I do. And it's not necessarily about this book. I was just curious, how did it come about Will Wheaton doing a narration or reading an excerpt?
Oh, the audio?
Yeah.
In Boneshaker, there are two point of view characters, a woman named Briar Wilkes and her son Zeke. And the Zeke chapters are read by Will Wheaton in the audiobook, yeah. For those who may be wondering why on earth. To make a long story short, Will and I have a bunch of friends in common and met a few years ago and got talking and hanging out. And when they started talking about doing an audiobook, my editor came to me and said, hey, you know, do you have any requests or anybody you'd like to see, you know, participate in this or whatever? And I don't know anything about audiobooks. I don't know who reads them. I don't know who does them or whatever. And so I said, well, I certainly don't have anything in mind. And then she hints a little harder. She's like, well, I know that Will Wheaton, for example, has been very supportive of this book. Perhaps if you were to ask him. I'm like, okay, all right.
No pressure.
It was cool, though. I mean, Macmillan, you know, they pulled together an offer, and, you know, he did it, I think, largely as a favor because he's an awesome human being. But also, like I said, he'd been really supportive of the book. He got an early copy of it and, you know, kind of a sneak friend's copy, and was just immensely helpful and really fantastic. I really appreciated it. He's a doll too. He's another one of those lovely people who I knew through the internet for years and then met in person and became actual friends with. So
that's awesome.
The internet has really, you know, I don't know if I would have had this kind of career, you know, 20 years ago before any of this was really doable. So it's kind of new and exciting for me as well in its way.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, why don't you, so obviously Bloodshot is out now, and you said that you're working on a follow-up to Bloodshot. Is that the case right now?
Indeed. It is called Hellbent, and it's actually, it's in copy editing right now. It's nearly done. And it's the same people having more adventures, only this time there's a box of magical penis bones. Yes, you heard that right. My parents are very proud.
And she'll be writing something for Rigor Mortis Part 2. You know,
well, no, it's for, well, I mean, as you may or may not be aware, many mammals do have literal penis bones, and they are very important in ceremonial magic traditions, at least in a lot of them, and so these are magical penis bones from quasi-mythical creatures, like werewolves and griffins and the like. And somebody stumbles across a cigar box full of them at an antiques roadshow. So
yeah, see,
things get weird.
I don't like to think about that kind of stuff because that also leads to the inevitable mental picture of the extraction process.
Yeah, I go into that actually. In fact, like the first, oh Lord, the entire first chapter, say like the first 30 or 40 pages, is basically one long penis joke. My editor was delighted. So we had a lot of fun with that. But yeah, that I believe it is slated for the end of August this year. They're releasing them both in the same year, so no pressure, right?
Yeah.
But to tell you the truth, I actually had more fun writing the sequel than I did the first one because I have this really fantastic editor. Well, I'm lucky. I have several really fantastic editors. This particular fantastic editor really helped me pull together Bloodshot in a way where I kind of had a vague vision for it, and she really, really helped me turn it into something from which I could launch more stories in a much more accessible way.
So she helped you build the world.
Really, the sequel was much easier than the first one. It's like, okay, well, now I know what these people are really like. Now right. I know the kinds of things they can do. And
you've established the world.
I'm really looking forward to it.
You've established the world and the characters.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
I'm really excited about it. It'll be fun.
Good. And then, obviously, you said you're going to be writing more steampunk stuff as well. What's sort of on the horizon with that?
Well, one of the four books I have coming out this year. it's the next steampunk one. It's called Ganymede, and it is a steampunk submarine adventure taking place in New Orleans, basically, in my alternate history universe. And it is also very, very cool. I've gotten to see the cover art yet, but I can't show anybody, and it's driving me crazy. It looks awesome.
Is that the alternate universe on your Clockwork Century website?
Mm-hmm. Yep, okay, awesome. Same one. This is the sequel to Dreadnought, which was the sequel to Boneshaker.
Cool.
And there will be at least one more of those, but my editor and I are still kind of talking about which story we want to put after this one, so I'm not positive what's going to be next for that. so yeah, so there's more steampunk stuff coming and more urban fantasy coming, and I shall juggle all of these things, and it will be fine. Oh, and I also have, I believe, slated for this summer. It was actually, I think, supposed to be out last year. George R. R. Martin's superhero universe, the Wild Cards franchise.
Mm-hmm.
I magically, like seriously, I don't know what I did in a former life, got invited into that consortium. And after badgering him for months, I finally conned him into letting me do the frame story for the next Wild Cards mosaic. It's called Fort Freak, and it'll be out, I think, in July.
Awesome. Nice. That's great. That's
so, yeah,
great.
I've been busy.
That's great. All really interesting and different projects. That's great. Well, congratulations on all of that. And I look forward, thank, like I said, Bloodshot was my first experience reading it, but I definitely want to go check out everything else that you're doing too. I really enjoyed it. So thank you very much.
Thank you so
much. Thank your publisher for sending the book my way. And to wrap up, why don't you tell people where they can go to find you online and social media and your website and all that kind of jazz.
All right. Well, everything is pretty much linked through my main website, which is just sherrypriest.com. And you can just Google me to get to that. And you don't even have to spell my name right to get it. Like 20 of the top 30 search terms leading to my website are misspellings of my name, some of which are so far out there. I think the people at Google must be freaking wizards that they even figured out that people were looking for me. But no, it's just sherrypriest.com. And there's links to my Twitter and LiveJournal and everything else and Goodreads and just about everything. Oh, and the Clockwork Century page, which is dedicated to the alternate history universe of Boneshaker and Drug Hunt. I'm really easy to catch online.
Do you still like LiveJournal?
Yes, but. I feel like people have kind of been wandering away from it. It's certainly less interactive than it used to be. There's less. I feel like most of my readership these days probably comes to me through my actual blog instead of through LiveJournal. Mm-hmm. But I've had it for so long. I mean, literally 10 years now, that I'm certainly not about to get rid of it. So
I was just curious.
Everything over there.
I kind of stopped using LiveJournal a couple of years ago just because of exactly what you're talking about. You know, it was very community centric, and then it just sort of, you know, stopped being about a community.
Yeah, I realized the extent of the problem when, actually a couple of months ago, I went looking. I was like, you know what, my LiveJournal has looked the same for like a year now. I need to go find a cool new theme for it. Yay. And I realized that there aren't any.
Mm-hmm.
And there haven't been in a couple of years. And even the really busy, you know, developmental and mod communities and whatnot that had tens of thousands of people on them haven't been updated since like 2008.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. This is a problem.
Yeah, next. You know what's next on the chopping block is Blogger, John.
No,
probably.
Yeah,
well, that after MySpace, maybe.
Yeah,
MySpace
exactly.
Is the only one I don't have. I did delete my MySpace page because I got so much porn and band spam that I just couldn't deal with it anymore.
Well, yeah. the joke is that MySpace went down for a week at Christmas and nobody noticed.
Yeah, I believe.
Pretty much.
Well, anyway, so that kind of wraps it up. Sherry, thanks so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
You know, anytime you have
thanks for having me, you guys. It's great to talk to you.
Oh, yeah, and if you want to just come and talk about barbecue for an hour next time, we can do that.
Okay,
but anytime you have anything, anytime you have anything coming out, you want to come and chat about it, you know, please come on again. It would be great. So,
well, thank you so much.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
And we're back. Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Sherry Priest. Go check out all of her stuff, and hopefully we can get her back on the show when she has another book out, which will be like five times next year, because I guess she has a ton of books coming out.
She's very prolific. I mean, that word count, that daily word count, that is amazing. That's awesome.
Yeah, very impressive, very impressive, and
yeah.
super nice person, so we're really happy to get her on the show. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
Nothing.
Okay.
go to atfmb.com, see what I've put up. Usually there's a couple of posts there. SFsignal.com, I usually have a couple posts there. Go check that out. Oh, I know what I've got coming up. I know. Okay. Here you go. GraspingForTheWind.com.
Okay.
John Ottinger.
Okay.
I completely missed my post last month. I'm supposed to give him something every month. I didn't do it because it just blew up and it exploded into this thing. And so I think every Wednesday in February, he's going to be doing a post of mine, because we broke this one huge massive post up into multiple posts, and it's called Podcasting 101.
Mm-hmm.
And it answers the question, should you start a podcast? And I break it all out for people, talking about, you know, everything that goes into podcasting. Because for whatever reason, I have become the podcasting dude.
Yeah.
And, you know, even Murr today told me, like, it's because you're an awesome, you know, podcast producer. But yeah, so, you know, I've got that coming up on Grasping for the Wind, and that'll be like every Wednesday, I think is what he said.
Cool.
Podcasting 101, and it'll be like part one, part two, part three, and then I think I'm doing an extra credit piece or something.
And then what you have to do, Patrick, after that's out, you have to like get that into, at a minimum, some sort of ebook, and then you can sell it.
Yeah.
Why don't you do that? You should do that. Anyway, so that's great, man. I'm glad to hear it. I look forward to reading that. People always ask about that too. It's like, how do you do this for podcasting? How do you, so, you know, you might as well share the knowledge that you've built up with that. So
yeah,
very good, very good.
I skyped with Haggle Rat. What's her name? I've already forgotten.
Adele.
I'm terrible about names.
Adele.
Adele Waring. Yes, thank you. I see. Now I've got her stuck. It's like World of Warcraft. Now I've got her Twitter handle stuck in my head. So it's like in World of Warcraft, I would always know the person's character's name, and I would forget their real name.
Yes, that happens.
That happened all the time. So I even Skyped with her for like 15, 20 minutes the other day, helping her set up an audio podcast feed thing.
Yeah.
Did you know that Skype, you can actually share your screens?
I did not know that.
Yeah, there's a sharing feature. And so I was able to share my screens, and it was like using GoToMeeting to train somebody. It was awesome.
Wow, weird. Cool. Who knew?
And now you know.
Yeah. Anyway, so for me this week, I've been doing – well, first of all, everyone should go to functionalnerds.com. I know many people probably get this podcast through iTunes, which is the way I get my podcasts. But if you're only doing that, go to the website and, you know, subscribe to the feed – you know, subscribe to the blog and the feed reader, because we are having – content other than the podcast in there. I'm doing video reviews now, so those will show up in the feed. We are having some outside people write reviews, and Kit Sherrod's doing some comic stuff, and we have some other people on tap, so it's kind of dripping out slowly, but you know, make sure you subscribe to that, because you'll get content at least every week now other than the podcast, so check that out.
And when you're there, you can buy John and Elio's songs right from the sidebar.
Yes, you can.
And you can click on donate and give us money to help us pay for hosting.
That would be good too. Yeah. We do this out of our own pocket, which we love doing it. So it's
not going to go away. It's just, it'd be nice, you know.
Yeah.
By the way, I like your video reviews. Those are kind of cool.
Thanks. They're actually going to run up on SF Signal as well. I talked to DiNardo about it, and he's going to...
Screw him.
Yeah, that's our content. Screw DiNardo. but he's going to run them. Actually, I think he's going to run the Star Wars one tomorrow, which will actually be a week later by the time this comes out. But that's that. And I do have some new music stuff coming up. I'm trying to like sort of finish off a couple songs, and Patrick's going to help me write a song, and I have to send him something for that. But I actually did, on Twitter I posted that I had a really stupid idea for a song, and you know, people were like, oh, you should write it anyway. So I wrote this really stupid song called New Releases, and all I did, I went to Locus and I found all the new releases for February.
Oh my God, that's a long list.
And I wrote all of those authors' names into a song.
Wow.
And it's stupid. But I did it. I could not let it go for some reason. So I did it. So I'm just about done with that. By the time this airs, this should be up. Maybe it'll even be done enough where this will be the song you hear at the end of this episode, quite possibly.
Is it like Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire?
No, it's more like the I guess so, a little bit. It's more like the Grasping for the Wind song that I did for Onger. It's more like that, where I just sort of rhyme people's names and then have a chorus. So it's stupid, but it's something. So so check that out, or don't, because it's stupid. Anyway, and you can follow me at twitter.com/JohnAnilio.
And I'm at twitter.com/ATFMB. Hey, you know what? I haven't gotten any hate mail over the funky, weird bluegrass covers of classic rock songs I've been throwing in.
No, because they're awesome. Because they're awesome.
It is actually kind of scary that they are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think I was going to like them, and now I find myself liking them. But yeah, I mean, if you send me the song, I'll put it in the end.
Yeah, I might try to throw it up on Bandcamp, and I might just give that one away for free because it's I'm only doing a little acoustic version of it, and it's real rough because it is kind of silly. But anyway.
Oh, and now people need to go and listen to I Should Be Writing, to the feedback show, because in it is John Anilio and Devo Spice doing Good Cop Bad Cop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really fun. Devo did most of the work on that. I kind of just wrote the melody, but he wrote all the lyrics. And yeah, it was really fun.
It's
really
awesome. Fun. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, yeah. So that's awesome.
Go check that out too. That was pretty cool. But
yeah, anything else?
No, that's about it. All that I can think of right now. So very good. And so I'm not sure. I don't have
who's on the show next week.
I'm not sure. So
okay. we'll just figure something out.
Yeah, no, I have people booked. It might be our mystery guest that we did not have on, who we were supposed to have on at one point.
Oh, yeah,
so,
don't jinx that.
Hold on, let me see if that's who is.
Don't say the name.
Oh, no, no, actually next week is Mark Stevenson, who wrote the.
Okay.
Yeah, so Mark Stevenson's on next week. So so that's cool. That's a nonfiction book, so a little bit of a change of pace for us, but very cool anyway, so we're looking forward to talking to him. So, all right, everyone, we'll see you next week.
Don't put words in my mouth.
Well, I am looking forward to it. Maybe Patrick's not, but I am, so. There you go. All right, everyone, have a great week.
Bye.
My name is John and I'm an
old. I was just thinking, Patrick will occasionally do these Easter eggs. Well, he'll sort of take the pre-show conversation and work in sort of like funny lines, like out of context at the end over music. So I'm thinking like, oh, this will probably be an episode with Easter eggs, I bet.
We only have one role.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk about politics, religion, or barbecue.
Okay. Wait, yeah. Politics, religion, or what was the third?
Barbecue.
Barbecue?
Yeah, because those are the.
I like barbecue.
Yes, but those are the three most polarizing topics in America. It can be very polarizing because people don't understand that there is no such thing as barbecue outside of Kentucky.
I don't know. In Tennessee, I had some pretty good barbecue, man.
That's not barbecue. My family says if they put sauce on it, it's not barbecue.
Oh, they do dry rub?
Yeah. My mom's side of the family is from Paducah. I remember in living in Chattanooga, there was someone who told me about the best barbecue place they'd ever had. So, oh, it was so good! You know,
Sticky Fingers?
No, it wasn't Sticky Fingers, but I've been there. Yeah, I like Sticky Fingers too, but that's because I'm not Southern enough, I guess, for my family sometimes. If you should be traveling in Paducah, Kentucky, I've been assured by my family that there are three places where you can get good barbecue, and this is the order in which you should try. First, visit Harnett's. That's H-A-R. NEDS, Harnett's Drive-In. That's your first stop. If Harnett's has run out of barbecue, which happens because they only make so much, your next stop should be Starnes. Starnes Barbecue. If after going to Starnes you find that they too have run out of barbecue, your third and final choice, although it won't be perfect, is Backwoods. All of these places do have sauce, but they will look down upon you for ordering it. If you were raised in California, are young and stupid, and attempt to order chicken, everyone will laugh at you. Believe me, I know.